This News Talk 1010 podcast is brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Time to feel the rush of the round table. Brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Are you really an independent contractor? Find out in seconds for free at PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 28th of May. Brian and Jay, alongside of Bill Carroll, host of the Bill Carroll Show, Fridays at noon, and the Morning Rush at CFRA in Ottawa.
Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Also joining us, Jaskaran Sandhu, senior consultant at Crestview Strategy. Hello, Jaskaran.
I think I'm here.
There you are. Yes, you are here.
Yes, you are.
Okay. Let's start off with what we've been listening to over the last 45 minutes or so. The lawyer for this family of this young woman who lost her life after falling from a balcony at a High Park apartment tower yesterday. The lawyer speaking out, Nia Singh, saying that this was a case, and again, these are the family's words, this was a case of the mother calling for a mental health call, wanting to have her daughter taken to a place like CAMH to make sure she was taken care of. Something escalated. The young lady was in the apartment. Police officers entered the apartment. Next thing you know, she was found 24 stories below. And questions, Bill, continue to swirl. You know, you've got allegations on one side, according to our crime specialist, Mark Mendelson, and he's right. The police can't really illustrate their side of the story because they're bound by the SIU who are currently investigating this.
Yeah, and we need to take a deep breath because these things tend to be a Rorschach test for your political point of view a lot of times, right? You default to one side or the other. Never trust the police. Always trust the police. We all have to take a deep breath and understand that families are upset. They want to know what happened here. They have every right to know that. Cops are sometimes bad people. Sometimes they make mistakes. Sometimes they're not trained well. Sometimes they do everything right and terrible things happen anyway. I have no idea where on the spectrum that is. I think we just have to sit back, be sad about this, and of course, look into it. Let's be thorough and make sure if something went wrong, it gets righted as best we can.
Jaskaran?
Yeah, I think there's two things here that come to my mind immediately. One is, and this is an example where body cams are very useful as a tool of accountability, and it's just a tool of evidence, especially in something like an SIU investigation. So I think that's one thing right off the bat. It's just an example of where something like this would be incredibly useful for the families and for everyone else that's been following this. And the second issue is, you know, there's an ongoing conversation around whether or not the police is like an effective force in dealing with mental health issues or calls, and that are they given the adequate training to deal with that, if that's in fact what this call was about. So there's a couple of things here that I think immediately, just from a policy perspective, that would be helpful here in getting to the bottom of this and ensuring that families get the peace of mind that they rightfully deserve and for something that's so horrific.
Yeah, I think if people went into this story earlier this afternoon, sort of like Bill said off the top, leaning one way or the other based on what they had only heard, when you heard the mental health aspect of it, the severe epilepsy, the episodes that have happened before, the mom calling police before, her wanting to go to CAMH, that is probably the most important layer. And I think that's going to be a tough one to sort of disseminate. And to Descarin's point, I was going to ask Mark Mendelson about that too. You know, what happens in those situations? Is it up to police to intervene? Is it up for police to remove someone from a home? Is an ambulance called? Is every situation different? Certainly so many questions around this one. And as Mark also mentioned when we spoke with him previously, you know, it's probably going to be quite some time before we get all of the answers. And I know people obviously want this to happen at lightning speed, but
and no matter what you do, Jay, cops are always going to be part of the equation, right? You're not going to have a team of mental health specialists in cruisers driving around waiting to respond to calls. And also, sometimes people who legitimately have mental health issues are also a danger to themselves and other people as well. So police are always going to be involved, and it's going to be a really tricky situation. So
yeah, but to, you know, to Jaskaran's point, the idea of body cameras, Bill, we've worked together for years and years and years. We've been having this discussion in the city, it seems, for decades. You know, Sammy Yateem, Andrew Loku, now you've got this young woman who lost her life. It's never going to bring those people back.
But I like them overall, Ryan, but the problem is policing is often very dirty business, right? And a lot of people who've never been in a bar fight in their life will look at the police using force to take down somebody who is dangerous, and they some people automatically say it's too much force, no matter how little force is used. So that could cut a bit both ways. Overall, though, I like them, but I think that has to come with a very careful component of education for the public as well. And that never seems to work, you know, because they've had them in a lot of U.S. cities for a long time, and people still see what they want to see.
2 days ago in this city, during this show, we had a shooting in Toronto's entertainment district in the area of King and Peter. We've seen the video since, and man, it is as brazen as it comes. That shooting left one Toronto rapper dead, a 21-year-old, one of five, as a matter of fact, rappers who have died in this city in the last few months. Just, Karen, this caused the Toronto Sun to put out a headline that the rapper's name was Houdini, and it said, "Who made Houdini vanish?" That is, of course, drawn up the ire of a number of different people. I've made the argument today that if these same people make the argument that rap music and gang culture also should be under the microscope, then okay, you know, have at the Toronto Sun. Otherwise, you're just as much to blame.
Look, I think the first thing, one of the issues with that headline was, I think it's making light of the death of someone, and that's never right. And I think that it's a fairly crass way of going about it, and I think it rightfully deserves criticism on that front. As far as rap music or hip hop or really any type of music, a lot of it is driven by a critical lens of like society, of issues that are faced within the community. There's a social justice angle to it. There's a lot that's steeped in the culture and the history of those genres of music. And it's not like violent acts or incidents tied to one music. It's like just one genre of music has a monopoly on acts of violence happening. You know, there's rock concerts where things go down. There's pop concerts or events where things go down. This like no one genre has a monopoly on this. So I think at the end of the day, the headline was a little crass and rightfully, I think, offended some folks.
Just, Karen, seriously, when's the last time you heard about K-pop beef or yacht rock vendettas? This doesn't happen.
No,
this happens in hip-hop.
I'm not as well versed on K-pop.
Yeah, and listen, Bill, I'll thoroughly admit it. I'm somebody who grew up on hip-hop and rap music, and I think it is part of that culture. It does glorify it. Not every song and not every part of the genre does that, but certainly we'd be kidding ourselves to say that we have five rappers dead in the city and that doesn't somehow link back to the music in some regard, that the line between reality and fantasy isn't somewhat blurred there.
You know, I sat next to a guy at almost every LA Kings home game for about 6 years. About 2 years in, I finally asked him, "What's a kid from Winnipeg doing in L.A.? And you seem to have a lot of connections and success. What do you do?" Turns out he ran a record company that signed NWA. And so I had fascinating conversations with him about what it was like to deal with those artists in the early days. One of the things that will stand out forever is how he said, "You know, you have to understand, Bill." And he went to a committee at Congress and fought for the right to their voices to be heard. And he said, "You have to understand, these were kids who had no hope, who came out of the toughest parts of Compton, and they were the real deal. I mean, they were scary gang members, but they were talking about their life and they were looking for a way out and expressing their fear for police and how they felt they had no hope and no choice but to join gangs and how difficult it was to get out of it." So, but I think what's grown from there, and I'm certainly no expert in the genre, but he certainly is, what has grown from there, he believed, and I agree, is a lot of imitation, right? A lot of people feel like to be in that genre of music, you have to have this image. And so, you know, instead of the culture created the music, now the music is creating the culture. It's a fascinating and a scary thing.
This is an easy transition here because I'm going to guess all of the three weapons that were used in the entertainment district shooting the other day, none of them were legal weapons. In fact, on the victim's side of things, there were two sets of people firing at each other. Those two guns have been recovered. The other one is outstanding that likely killed that individual rapper Houdini. But today, a majority of Canadians in a new poll suggest that they support a gun ban, but just, Karen, they want the focus to be on smuggling and weapons getting into this country, which is something I've been banging the drum against for quite some time.
Yeah, municipal leaders came up pretty strong on this when the initial announcement was made around the upcoming ban on assault rifle style guns. I don't think it's clearly defined by the government as well as it should be, at least. But at the time, municipal leaders stood up and said, well, this is great. Like, we're not here to say this is not necessary. The real issue, the real source of gun crime on our streets is illegal guns coming over the border from America. And we need the government to do more on that. And at the time, the federal government was kind of shy in providing any sort of solution. I think we've seen a change in tone, and I think that's the right way to go about it. That if you talk to law enforcement, you talk to municipal leaders, you talk to folks on the ground in the communities, they'll be quick to tell you that the real issue, again, is illegal firearms coming from the United States. And that's what really needs to be clamped down on, and a particular focus needs to be given to.
Yeah, Bill, I've always said that it's the political correctness that has allowed government to sort of move around the issue the way they have without addressing it head on.
The problem is neighborhood, though. Really, ultimately, when you get down to it, I couldn't care if they melted down every handgun on the planet. And I do think you need multi-pronged approaches, because murder is already banned, and people still do it with guns. So people will break the law. So one of the things you have to do is try to cut off the source. But while you're living next to the United States of America, and it's so easy for people to cross the border and bring anything they want with them, I don't know how we ever solve that problem. So I think we have to pull the other levers a lot harder and try to make people feel like they have a chance at a life that does not include being a member of a gang, that there's hope for them, that they can get a job and a career and a decent living, because that's your only option. Guns are not going away in the United States in our lifetime, so we better learn to live with that.
I wonder what the impact is right now, though, with the borders closed, Jay, where it might be a lot more difficult to get a gun into the country.
Yeah, no kidding. And you know what?
It's a lot more difficult to get anything else going.
Yeah, but the government came with a handgun or the assault weapons ban, and they exempted people living on reservations or reserves, depending on which side of the border you're on. And that's one of the places that's easy to smuggle, right? You've got international territory that crosses two borders that we don't police. So didn't make a whole lot of sense. That's smuggling will always be easy. It's a big border. There are, the problems with nations that share the borders and rivers that are easy to cross. It's a tough one. We're not going to be able to stop it on that end.
Also, not surprisingly, in this same poll, increasing funding to crack down on gun smuggling across our borders in Eastern Canada, specifically Nova Scotia, the support of that was up to 96%.
Makes a lot of sense. Bill Justkarn, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
thank
guys.
You.
This News Talk 1010 podcast was brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.